In all reality, to go from a one doctor practice to a two doctor practice, I'm not having to completely
You
overhaul
should not
my
have to.
team.
No, you
You
should
know,
not.
like to your point, I think that initial team member that makes that next move or strategy work more effectively is obviously a bigger clinical skill set, because then I have more that I can delegate down, having a closer, you know,
Sales,
a
a sales team,
dedicated sales
basically.
team.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the Millennial Dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast.
The Dentistry Made Simple Podcast.
That's right. It's your favorite episodes, the ones where... T and I get together and talk shop and try to solve the world's problems that, you know, take more than just one of us to solve.
We're not solving any world problems here. We're probably helping
dental. I forgot the word dental world problems.
Yeah, so in the scheme of things, not much.
But this will be fun.
Yeah, listen, this week I wanted to sit down and talk to you, Sully, and everybody out there about ceilings. And not the kind of ceilings that you're thinking through, but trying to break through ceilings in your practice and kind of, you know, I've broken through a few ceilings, you've broken through a few ceilings, and kind of what prompted me on this was, as I'm talking to some of our mastermind program people, is they always have this feeling like other people are being successful, other people are having results. Why am I not having results? And, you know, I have to kind of remind them that they're breaking through a different ceiling than you are. They may be in the low hanging fruit section of things, or they may be in the, hey, now I've put the leadership position in and now I'm seeing the fruits of my labor. And I thought it'd be great to talk about different ceilings in dentistry as a practice owner, and even as an associate, it's all the same, and kind of walk through that. So what do you think about that?
No, I love that idea. You know, honestly, I think it's interesting because hindsight's always 20/20, right? And like there's been, you know, I came into a practice that was virtually at the first ceiling, which we'll talk about, right? Yep. Which was my dad had been practicing for 25 years. Solo doc, same thing. He did the same number year in, year out. You know, and then, now I think we've probably broken through, you know, really another two ceilings, or we're in the process of the second ceiling out of which would be our third ceiling, I guess. But it is interesting because a lot of times the problems are the same, but a lot of times they're different.
No, they're you're right.
And so like reframing your mindset is important, because what usually gets you through the first ceiling is not what gets you through the second one. What ultimately is not what gets you through the third one.
Yeah.
And so I am looking forward to kind of jumping into this and talking about it. And I think it's important, too, because the part that's probably we won't talk enough about today, I'm guessing, is the accountability and camaraderie I think needed to break through ceilings. Like, it's very difficult to break through the ceiling on your own. And frankly speaking, it's very difficult to break through it at arm's length, which is what I would consider like a listener, right? Like if you're a listener, it's never really engaged beyond this. It's difficult because there's such nuances to the information or the strategy, or, and you just need accountability. You need that accountability and camaraderie. So,
yeah. And I think that's one way in which DSOs are winning more than private practice dentists is you'll see a lot of the large groups, they will actually do, you know, doctor retreats, owner retreats.
Yep.
They create this community, because what we all know is that iron sharpens iron. We get around different people. You learn more. You get inspired. You help others. You get help by others. And, that's one of the things that we try to create at 3D Dentists, is it's a organization basically for private practice dentists or individual dentists, associates included, that want to level up, but be surrounded by something different than their local study club, which you've convinced me of that don't exist anymore.
Well, there does less happening than they probably should have. Yeah. Speaking of which, before we get going, because this is sponsored by 3D Dentists, these podcasts, you know, so we get to talk about 3D Dentists. But I do want to share a couple dates, you know, and August 18th to 22nd, we have our Full Arch Express course. That's probably maybe too last minute. Then we have our tooth replacement therapy. That is September 8th through 12th. And then we get to our fall Full Arch Express, which is October 6th through 10th. So if you're looking to get into implants, either didactic or live patient, our first course is with Neodent this fall. Super excited. So make a point to commit to that and getting it done. This year.
Yeah, so let's live off of that. Thank you. Both of our children, thank you for supporting 3D Dentists.
Yep.
And it keeps the podcast going. These aren't free for us to do. But either way, let's start by defining the ceilings. And these are broad numbers, okay? And there's more than just the economic part of it. But let's the easiest measurement for ceilings is typically dollar amounts. And so I think right now, let's make it the first ceiling that people kind of hit is that $1.5 million mark.
Yep.
As a solo dentist.
Right.
I know some will say, oh, I'm doing more than that as a solo. Some will say I'm doing less, roughly speaking. The first ceiling is I'm $1.5 million. I'm a solo dentist. I think the second ceiling is probably right around, let's call it $3 million.
Sure.
As a multi-doc practice. Okay. And then the third ceiling is probably around the $5 million mark. And that's where you go from being a dentist to truly a larger business owner. And I want to talk about the different aspects and different things that people have to go through. So again, ceiling number one is $1.5 million.
Yep.
Solo dentist. Ceiling number two is right around $3 million, multiple docs. Ceiling number three is $5 million or so. And that's when you have to go from being the operator to being a CEO. I don't love that word CEO, but we'll go with that. And, so do you think
I do. I'm sitting here thinking about it. It's like, it's funny because like, you kind of mentioned it. The $1.5 million, I think, is a good number. Mm-hmm. Because it's also like, to me, what I hear in that is that's the number where I should start to, I need to understand that my strategy needs to start changing.
It has to.
Because a lot of people may be like, oh, yeah. I mean, there's the ego part of it. That's like, I'm a 1.8 solo doc or I'm a 2 million. Mm-hmm. Well, the argument there is you're overdue.
Yeah.
Moving on. Like you're actually... Yeah, you've stretched your ceiling.
You never broke the ceiling. You stretched it.
Like yeah. You haven't made it past the ceiling, and that's kind of an important concept. I think is that breaking through a ceiling means that you're doing something different on the other side that yields even better results for your business.
Yeah,
and so
and I want to say not just your business, for your life. Because that dentist that says, oh, I'm doing $1.8, $2 million all by myself, dude, you're tied
completely
to that office. Like that person, 95% of them probably aren't taking 2 to 3 weeks off at a time. They're probably not taking more than 2 to 3 weeks off a year. And they're totally tied to that practice. The day they leave or the day they shut down to go on vacation, the whole operation stops. And that's not a, if your practice depends on you for everything, you don't own a business, you own a stressful job. And I think that to me is the mindset. So that kind of brings into what are the levers that you have to pull to kind of break through each of these ceilings? And the levers themselves are the same. The things you do are going to be slightly different, but I kind of broke it down into five levers. One is your mindset, the owner mindset, which, by the way, falls into our leadership category. Another thing that falls into leadership category is the team seats and the people, building the right organizational chart for your practice or your business. Number three is the clinical skill set of the owner dentist. Number four is your ability to delegate and train. In other words, how are you leveling up others around you? And then number five is your branding and marketing of yourself and your practice. And those are the kind of five levers that will be consistent in this conversation today. So again, owner mindset, the right seats, the right people, clinical skill set, delegation and training, getting production off your plate, and branding and marketing.
I think those are great. You know, I, I, I look at, so I think we see these a lot. I mean, I'm curious, going back to UT, mm-hmm. like, when did you feel like you broke through that first ceiling of maxing out as a solo doc?
Yeah, so my number is a little bit lower because we got paid a little bit less, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But my first ceiling was probably around 2010, 2011, about 10 years into practice. Not making excuses, but one, I had a different mindset of what I thought dentistry was going to be just me alone in the practice for the longest time. And then, you know, we went through the 2008 crash. Then I started having kids. And so then my perspective on what I needed to be changed. But I reached that about 2010, 2011. We were probably at about $1.3 million in revenue at the practice at that point in time. And I no matter what I tried, I couldn't break through. I went and learned more CE. I got different, you know, I couldn't break through, get past that 1.3 number in revenue for our practice.
That's probably a 1.8 number now.
Like, it's probably really 1.7. Yeah.
And like, I think you can stretch that. But point being is like, yeah, I think it goes back to that overdue thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think your upside of breaking through the ceiling sooner,
yeah,
actually leads to more opportunity when you do that.
Yeah, so
not waiting necessarily that long.
So to me, the biggest lever for someone stuck in that $1.5 million range, and this, I'm going to nuance this, so please tell me if I'm making it too confusing, is going to be one of two things. It's going to be either your clinical skill set, because if you're doing $1.5 million and you're Dr. DFB, drill, fill, bill, you're hustling. I mean, you're just grinding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, if you're at that $1.5 million mark and you already have an advanced skill set, then the lever is going to be a little bit different. So if you're Dr. DFB, in other words, I'm your prototypical CEREC dentist, I'm your prototypical crown and bridge dentist, I do my $1.5 million in revenue through drill, fill, bill, the occasional here and there thing, what I will tell you is that the biggest lever there is your clinical skill set. You got to level up your skill set, because now suddenly your 1 hour spent doing a quadrant of fillings can be 1 hour doing an implant. Your 1 hour spent doing a single crown can be an implant or orthodontics or XYZ. Now, if you say, hey, I've already got the skill set, then the lever to pull is going to be your team in the seats bucket. In other words, you probably are, and this hurts people, you probably don't have the right seats on the bus. In other words, what got you to, like, you probably don't have a truly dedicated treatment coordinator. That will probably be the biggest seat that I see missing, or that we see missing in almost all of the mastermind practices, is a truly dedicated treatment coordinator. And that's probably the big ceiling seat that I would say that if this is the one seat, that if you focus on this, this will be the first step with the clinical skills to get beyond the $1.5 million mark.
So I'm going to reframe a little bit here. So I think, kind of hearing you walk through that, just kind of brought to my mind, I think the two you mentioned, clinical skill sets and the leadership aspect with the team in the seats, I think those are the strategies that help you break through the ceiling. I think the thing that holds the most people back is the mindset.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
More about that. I look historically back at, like, I wasn't there, so like my perspective on this was I was the one helping my dad break through that. I was never a solo doctor, right? So like,
right.
I can speak to seeing kind of like what he struggled with, and he was doing more clinical stuff, but really that has made him a more efficient, productive hamster.
Yeah,
you know, like. He was
I don't mean, I apologize. I mean to interrupt. I apologize.
Yeah. Though.
He had the skills. I'll argue he wasn't doing.
Definitely wasn't doing the potential number or the amount he should have been.
Yeah.
He had the training.
Yeah. The mindset was, oh, I'm going to be a jack of all trades. If I can do one crown, one implant, one this,
right. I won't improve any of my processes. Yeah. I'll just get the same sort of percentage of what those things are. And so I think the biggest issue there was a mindset, specifically a mindset of abundance, and not, I think the fear in breaking through that first ceiling and going from solo doc to multi-practice doc is breaking through the mindset that there's enough.
Yeah.
That there's enough abundance that I'm not going to be dividing my practice into two, that I now I'm not going to make as much money. Because in all reality, to go from a one doctor practice to a two doctor practice, I'm not having to completely overhaul my team.
You should not.
Like to your point, I think that initial team member that makes that next move or strategy work more effectively is obviously a bigger clinical skill set, because then I have more that I can delegate down. Having a closer, a dedicated sales team. Like, I think those are the two most important strategies. But I think the thing you have to, if you're listening to this and you're like, I'm that solo doc trying to break through, it's how do I break through that scarcity mindset that there's going to be enough, and how do you help someone overcome that?
I want to add one more mindset issue there would be that this is all there is. Like, I've hit the golden spot. And, if you're 60, it probably is the golden spot, because there's only 4 or 5 years left. But if you're 30,
right,
or 35, like, you mean you're 35, right?
36. 37 next month.
It's not the golden spot because you're not out in 5 or 6 years, right? And, can you imagine if you're a Dr. DFB, can you imagine doing that for the next 20 years of your career?
No.
No, right? And I don't think people put two and two together at that age, or even if you're my age, 49, can I imagine, like, even I say this to myself now, can I imagine doing what I'm doing now for another 10 years? And my answer is no, I just can't. I've got to get that mindset. So what was your question again?
Was how do you help somebody? Like, what's the advice there? Like, what's the advice in making the jump? Like, or maybe I'm going to rephrase it. Obviously, we see this experience with our mastermind docs all the time, solo docs, they're taking the plunge. What do you think is the thing that helps them overcome that, like, legitimately implementable-wise, like, tangibly, that helps them overcome that kind of mindset or scarcity feeling?
This is going to sound corny, but I think it's community. I think it's a proven path. It's holding hands with other people going through that journey with you. And knowing that it's possible, and knowing that when you hit bumps in the road, there's somebody that you can lean on that's been there, that's doing it, or somebody else that's in that fire with you.
So basically positive reinforcement that you're ready.
Yeah.
That there's someone who's done it, that's looked at your data and can give you, like, legitimately saying, okay, here, your numbers are tracking. Your new patient flow is tracking.
Yep. And they can predict, they can see the future because they've gone through that path before you, and there's a support team. I really do think that's what it is, because I think, looking back, remember I said to you, like, I thought dentistry was just me.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was just that's how dentistry was. And until I got out and saw and heard from others, I didn't realize that there was another option or another solution out there, or that more was something different was possible. So for me, I think the number one challenge is when you think you're at the top of the hill, it's time to look around and get other people around you.
And I think the first ceiling is the hardest, because the first ceiling is unwinding what made you successful, right? Yeah. So, like, the survival instinct of grinding and what makes you a successful solo dog practice that gets to that 1.5 number.
You're very unique. Like, that's a high level.
Right. Is that you now are asking me to switch from being the number one employee and mechanic in this business to now taking on a different sort of role, and that not being just my primary role. I think that's the hardest part in breaking through all these ceilings, is this, that initial mindset change.
The ego.
Yeah. Maybe not the ego, but I think it's just a fear that what you're asking me to stop doing, what's gotten me here.
Well, it's
what got me out of survival mode.
Well, this will be kind of the basis of my talk at the Full Art Summit in October in Vegas, is is what got you here is what's holding you back.
Yeah.
You know, it's the I got to serve every patient. I mean, and your dad went through this. This is what held him back. He's like, I can't stop doing that. These people have been good to me. I have to do this for them. And you know, it's just that you can't. So I think the action step there is level up clinically, or get the right, different team around you. And then the kind of leading into the next step is how do you become the $2.5 million practice? The $2.5-3 million practice, and that is you got to add an additional provider, and I think that's the action step to go from 1.5 to $2.5/$3 million is adding an additional provider is the most important step there, and what we talked about earlier, getting better clinically is giving you the ability to get more out of your existing patient base, so you don't have to double your patient base to add another practitioner to your practice. And getting a treatment coordinator is the step to allow you to actually sell these larger cases, bigger cases, and give you, because it takes more time and a different buying process for those patients that are looking to buy $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 worth of treatment.
Well, so, and we walked through this because, you know, one of the things we talked about was like, well, what are the procedures that really made that change most effective, like in hindsight, right? Yeah. And like, you know, for our practice, I think it was similar to you. It was cone beam and surgical procedures. Yeah. When we moved from just taking out teeth to now we do socket preservation, implant, ripping out teeth to just a tooth replacement workflow,
yeah,
of bringing in implant restorations, implant, place of implants, and extractions and bone grafting and everything that comes with it. That alone helped, along with adult orthodontics. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the biggest cool claim to fame during that time period for us breaking through that ceiling was that our jump from the 1.5 to the 3 million mark had no increase in active patient base.
Yeah.
No increase in active patient base.
I want that to set in for you listening. And this is what you kind of brought up, that scarcity mindset,
yep,
right? And what I keep bringing up is the clinical skill set needed and the sales team needed to be able to do that.
Yep.
And so to me, this is looking back. At the time, it wasn't simple, but looking back, it's so simple. The two most profitable specialties in dentistry are oral surgery and orthodontics. And so, you know, when I added those to our practice, like, it just was fascinating to me what happened. Like, I became essentially half my work became ortho and implants. And I only had to really give away, I only had to replace half my dentistry.
Right.
To be able to
that afford, out the same number.
Afford another dentist. And I didn't have to double my practice. And what I found there was by just offering a little bit of sedation, doing fewer well-planned visits, giving people the option to do all the dentistry at once, took us from $1.5 to $3 million. And not overnight. It's not like it happened overnight. But it took us to that pretty readily and easily without this need for a bigger facility.
Like, we didn't spend $1 on marketing at this, yeah, point. Like, none of that.
Yeah.
The same natural flow that was coming in, we were just doing, we were offering and presenting dentistry that we hadn't been presenting and offering in the past. And I think there's a misnomer here. And that is that, well, I should just look at what I'm referring out and that's all I bring back in. And that's not true, because there are so many patients who choose not to do the ortho just from the inconvenience of not being able to get it done in your office.
Right.
Or there's people who choose not to replace the tooth just because they're like, I don't want to go meet somebody else and go through that process. Like,
yeah,
like you can't just look at it one-to-one like, oh, well, I'm only referring this much out. So that's no, like there's more yeah, to it.
I want to add something here that I think we overlooked or didn't talk about. And I think we said something maybe slightly misleading in that we didn't spend any money on marketing. And that's probably true. But what we did spend was we made a concerted effort to market organically.
Yeah, we didn't spend any money on external marketing.
That's correct.
Would be
yeah, and
outside of website.
Yeah,
you know,
and so I look at someone like Allie. I look at some of our mastermind, Emily, for example. Some of our mastermind docs that have gone through this stage is what they did invest in from a marketing side was what I call personal branding. In other words, shouting from the rooftop, this is what I do. This is who I am. This is what I want you to come to my community, to my practice for. And so they got comfortable getting on camera. They got comfortable posting their work. They got comfortable asking patients for reviews that said the word dental implant or cosmetics or veneers or XYZ, you know, or babies or, you know, whatever it is that you want to do. They got comfortable with that part of marketing. And I think that is probably a key skill set that can excel. So, like, for example, if you're the dentist says, well, I've got the associate, I've got the skill sets, we're stuck at $1.82 million. Why am I not at $3 million? I'll probably argue it's a combination of you're not attracting the right patients needs that need that dentistry. And you probably don't have a truly dedicated treatment coordinator to actually help.
Let's move into the $3 million. Cause I think that moves us there is that, okay, now you're at that point where, you know, just by adding a provider, leveling up clinical skill set, that should expand the practice now to get close to, you know, now you're above 2.5, yep. you're moving towards 3. How do I break that ceiling?
Yeah.
Because that is kind of the next part of the process is you can't just, at some point you've added the majority of the procedures.
Yeah.
You know, like there's not, or you get diminishing returns. Yeah. By adding the procedures, if you don't work on your buying process, mm-hmm. and I think this really starts to play into the some of these other ones, like the even more so the dedicated sales team, and now getting into a level of delegation training. How can I continue to get things off my plate?
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest challenge there, is now to break through that $3 million ceiling. The owner dentist has to stop being the full-time dentist. Okay, their definition of full-time dentist has to change. They're still a full-time owner. They're still a full-time dentist in a way, but they don't see patients clinically full-time anymore. You know, to by and large, to get through that $3 million ceiling, you are going to have to become a leader in your practice that happens to do dentistry half the time, maybe a little bit more than half the time, but you're going to have to be a leader in your practice. And I think that's the biggest thing that you saw when you guys were taking Sullivan Dental Partners past that $3 million stage, when it got beyond, you and your dad got to $3 million pretty quickly because right. you both had great skill sets
right.
and all of that. But then I think what you saw was when you finally had to bring a non-Sullivan in to the yep. practice.
Creates new challenges.
That the biggest hurdle there was, I call it the leadership of getting out of the chair a little bit.
Well, and going... Naturally, that's where like you make the jump from the 2 to 3 doctors typically around there. And so the other part about this is now all of a sudden it does my team starts to grow mm-hmm. at a point that does it just requires more bandwidth and leadership because now maybe I do need to add another front office. Maybe I do need to add another hygienist to grow the base a little more. Like I'm now starting to truly start to have to do that, and like that next jump creates an exponential challenge in just the leadership needed to kind of lead now, not a team of, you know, 12 people, but maybe a team of 16 people
yeah.
and getting kind of above that number. And
so then you have to have sub leaders.
Right. Which was a new concept at that point, yeah. you know, but because at this point in that jump, I'm still that up to that 3 million mark. You kind of mentioned it. I was still full-time dentist, still doing all the hygiene checks or a lot of the hygiene checks. I was still daily interacting with the team. And so the leadership, all the team was happening by just osmosis of being around them. Now, all of a sudden you make this next jump where you're really starting to kind of more, probably at this point, your menu of services is becoming more specialized. So I'm getting things off my plate. I'm not interacting with as many team members on a daily basis. So now I need, again, sub leaders. I have to start looking at, you know, mentoring my associates more to make sure that our quality's the same. You know, that was really the big jump where I was like, I can't work 4 days a week anymore. Like clinically, I can't maintain that. I've got to now get to where, how can I move probably to 3 days clinically so that I've got a day that's not Friday, taking up my personal time that I can really invest in just leadership. It's not ownership. It's not like CEO-ness yet, right? That's like the next jump. This is just like just being the leader that the practice needs.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, you know, there's so many things in my head. So a couple of things. I think one is your clinical investment doesn't change. You're still investing in learning. It changes in what you're learning. Now you're learning how to differentiate yourself. So from a training side of things, you're learning how to make your practice stand out. Vertical integration, being able to deliver dentistry overnight, be able to deliver dentistry in one day versus 2 weeks, deliver a dentistry, you know, get started faster, you know, be able to, you know, basically build an in-house lab of some sorts in your practice. And I think the other thing that changes and...
Well, you're trying to, you kind of have to accelerate the brand of the, this is where branding comes in. Like the brand of the practice has to start changing where now I do want my new patient flow numbers to start. I need them to kind of increase and grow and be more of like, I'm driving new people here. Like
to the practice, not to you.
Yeah. To the practice, not to you, but to the practice at this point. And so the brand of the practice has to go beyond good old family practice that took care of people that we have to be more than that to make that jump past the $3 million mark.
Yeah. And then I think the other one, and I want to be somewhat gentle in saying this, which is unusual for me, maybe, is I don't believe practices need office managers under $1 million, $1.2 million. I think the owner...
I was going to ask you this that question next. I was like, when does the actual office manager come to play here? Or what ceiling?
I think an office manager helps you get from $1.5 million to $3 million. I think the office manager, the traditional office manager, holds you back when you get to $3 million. I think at that point you need a operations person. Someone that's looking deeper than just, I don't want to say babysitting, but that's what I think of it as. That's looking deeper. Like, so for example, your prototypical office manager, traditional office manager.
Before ceiling number one.
Is a babysitter. Literally, the hires, fires.
And like, I think personal assistant is the word that also runs to mind, right? Like, they're basically trying to take things off the dentist plate that.
You make my life easier.
They're just annoyed with.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's running payroll, calling the insect company. Like, it's like personal assisting, babysitting.
I would say it's basically, again, I'm trying to be gentle with this. It's basically somebody the dentist trusts. They don't really have to have any true skill set. They just got to have the trust of the dentist.
And part of our challenge with it, why we've always pushed back against it is we think it negates just the natural leadership that needs to be cultivating during that time that you're going to need a lot more later to get to these steps. And so that's why we just feel like that's not that seat could be better used somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. A treatment coordinator, for example.
Right, a treatment coordinator, for example.
Yeah.
During that period until you get closer to that point where you're getting towards 3 million.
I think an office manager in the traditional sense is probably a good need from, like, let's say $1.5 to $2.5, $3 million, somewhere in that ballpark. And at that point, the traditional office manager is probably that person that has their hands in a little bit of everything in the practice. They fit in as a treatment coordinator when needed. They fit in as the insurance billing person when needed. They answer the phones when needed. You know, they're kind of this, that I know everything that goes on in the practice, but I don't really know how to operate or run the practice. I know how to keep things together, but I don't know how to really, I don't know how to have insightful data into things.
Meaning I'm super helpful in a standpoint of like, I can keep the ship running. I can help, I can help carry out your vision,
right?
But I'm not necessarily like strategically spending time looking at data to be like a, almost like a third party perspective on how can we grow the business.
Yeah. Somebody that can, that can think for themselves a little bit.
Correct.
Right. And I think that's what, again, lovingly, I think that's what's kept me at the $3.5 million ceiling that I'm convinced we're going to break through at this point. Is that we need a different type of leadership in the practice that can help us get through that, and that's probably more of an operations type person, someone that, you know, instead of saying, hey, you know what, let me do the billing, they're like, hey, let me look at the numbers, let me say, hey, this is our opportunity, I know what we're built, what we're booked out for next month, hey, we're off $10,000 from next month, they're not so worried about today.
Yeah.
They're already saying, you know what, I'm out I'm off my projections for next month. What are we doing for next month? Whereas your office manager is worried about today.
I think that's a great way to really define this.
Yeah.
Is that the traditional office manager is someone who's a, they're just a fire putter outer for.
And we don't mean that disrespectfully.
No. But their focus is on the today's fires and this week's fires. And there's no sort of like really larger picture.
Yeah, there's no like, hey,
in projections.
You know, there's very little, hey, you know, I know we're spending 10 grand on marketing. This marketing channel's not working. Look, we need to redeploy our money somewhere else here. Hey, your implant, like, for example, I don't have an implant case scheduled for the month of August, partly because I'm not working 2 weeks, but still, that's no excuse. And so to me, that I can't do anything about that at this point, like big implant cases. I can't do anything about that at this point. That should have been recognized in June or July.
Yep.
Because that's the lead time for these implant cases, right? And so that's what's been missing in our practice is that future insight. Now, I have that, but you know, I'm not in the office every single day, which is part of our detriment of me, unique to me. And then when you have me busy seeing patients, like I can't be, you know, I'm doing dentistry that literally no one else in our practice can do. So that's kind of the ceiling that I've been hitting in this situation.
It's so funny you say this. Like I was proud of Jess. I walked down there earlier today. We were looking at a case from yesterday that she went through, and she was talking about it, and she was like, we were deciding kind of where it was going to go. Mm-hmm. And she was like, well, you know, we're August 5th, right?
Right.
So like it's super early in the month. And so she's like, based off where we're at, you know, production scheduled wise, I think we need to move this here because they're already at this point.
Yeah.
And so like, it's that kind of like strategic. I'm not running a production by provider port at the end of the month to see what I did.
Yeah.
I'm running that daily to predict
scheduled.
Where I'm going
yeah.
and what I need to be doing.
And what things do I need to change?
And how do I tweak it? And not just like, oh, because look, in our office, there's five different doctors, five different skill sets. So if Dr. A's down and they don't do X procedure, the focus can't be on X procedure because that doesn't solve Dr. A, like that, their schedule issue. You know, like there's a level of strategy that has to start happening that, if those conversations aren't happening, that's a leadership thing, but that is the mentality that keeps you from getting past that.
I'll give you some other examples. I don't want to make this an office manager operations conversation, but...
No, but I think it's important to the conversation because at that, when you get to that three and a half, whatever number that is, to break through that ceiling, it cannot... Like we said, like if we look at our practices and we just are you know, a huge difference from where we passed you guys in production. And if you look at the differentiating factor was one, there were
two of you,
two dentists.
Yeah.
So that helped. And then the other big thing was we had somebody walking alongside us in Aubrey that was more strategic in managing that aspect of the practice than someone that you had.
Yeah, you know, I'm not trying to make excuses. I was trying to build 3D and different things, right?
No.
But, you know, and so the other example I'll give you was, hey, like my person who I just hired a couple of months ago said, hey, I need to redeploy one of your assistants. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, I want them to make phone calls for me because our schedule's light at the end of the month. Like, so I'm going to give up today's limited exam because I need somebody dedicated for 2-3 hours and I've got the list of people for them to call. Like not even say, hey, go find the people. Here's the list. And I need you to get this called done, you know? And so that's just the difference. And that's how my mind has always thought myself. I've just lacked the ability to actually sit down and do it myself between either I got to stop doing dentistry. And so I can execute the vision, or I've got to get somebody around me that can see and understand the vision and can look in the future with me. And sometimes I want to be clear about, your current office manager may be that person, but you need a different level of training to help both of you get there. And so that's kind of what I think holds people back at the $3 million ceiling, and how to break through that is your training is going to be, sorry, your clinical training is going to be more in optimizing your workflow, optimizing, being able to do everything in the practice. You know, on the team side, you're really going to have to move from an office manager to an operations type leader. And on your side, you're going to have to step aside from being the horse that produces so much. You got to find a way to do your horsing in 2 days or 2.5 days a week, so that way you can spend the other time leveling up your associates. And what you will see in almost all multi-doctor practices that go beyond two dentists, somebody is no longer full-time, and part of their job, their role in the ownership is, how do I level up the other dentists? And I think that's a role that you took initially. And I think, are you still in the practice? Is that mainly still your role at this point?
I think so. You know, Dad's come around more to that concept. You know, I mean, I think mentality wise, the struggle has always been with that is, I'm almost, and this is probably an episode for another day, but I'm almost like pro business, whereas Dad's pro dentist. Mm-hmm. And so what I mean by that is, I'll give associates more opportunities. I'm more willing to probably train them myself. I'm more willing to take a back seat, maybe in short-term production pay cut, because I just have a bigger long-term vision. And in knowing that, like, I can't, like, you can't do 5 million with two dentists. Yeah. Like, you know,
you can,
but yeah. Like, someone's like, yeah, I can. Like, yeah, you can, but like not to the way I want to do it. And so like,
not sustainably.
Yeah. So like, so if that's where I want to get to, I need to understand, like, I've got to invest in people, you know, and Dad's always struggled with that in some level. And so I, you know, but the difference is I probably have given away too much in that regard, which is an episode for another day. But, you know, here's where I think we are. At this point, what I want to do is I want to pause. Mm-hmm. I want to tease. They got to come back to next week's episode. Yeah. We want to keep it shorter anyways, to hear how do you break through this last ceiling and continue this conversation on what it looks like to grow. And just kind of recapping so far, we've talked about, how do we get through the 1.5 ceiling? How do we get through the 3 million ceiling? And again, on the 1.5, recap that, T-Bone.
Yeah, so here's what I'll say. Okay, so to get to that 1.5 ceiling, okay, here's the statement I'll make. If your practice depends on you for everything, you don't own a business, you own a stressful job.
Yep.
Okay, to get from $1.5 million to $3 million, you don't need more CE. You need to implement the CE you've already taken.
Yep.
Like, if I were to break it down, if you actually just slowed down and just focused on implementing the CE, the skill sets that you have, that would take care of it.
There would be enough dentistry to basically support two doctors.
Oh, easily. Yep. Like, at our very best. Like, you used, I don't know if you remember this, you used to always argue with me about this. We were supporting two full-time dentists in our practice from 1.5 hygienists at our absolute best.
Yep.
Like, it was bonkers, because, you know, just the skill set was there, and the ability to communicate with patients and move them to treatment, the treatment they needed, was also there.
Yeah, if you're a 2-3 hygiene practice, easily can support
two dentists.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, especially if they have the right
skill set. It's not a patient flow problem if they have the right skill set. Yeah, it's a buying process. Yeah.
And then I think breaking through that $3 million ceiling, that point, it's really about you stepping back from being the only leader in your practice, and developing other sub leaders in your practice is what gets you beyond the $3-3.5 million stage in your practice. Did I do okay there?
That was great. Come back next week and hear more about how we break through these ceilings. More Exploring the Heart. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.